Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer, former middle school teacher and current college professor. And I want to talk about something that I don't think I share enough, which is the mistakes that I made followed by what I was able to do to kind of fix it. And this is inspired largely by a great post from Ross Cooper, and he kind of shares his mistakes in doing PBL. So here are some of the mistakes I've made with Genius Hour. That's the idea of this particular post. I want to point out that in this blog post, if you go to it on spencerauthor.com, I've also created a sketch animation video showing what Genius Hour is. So if you're curious at all about that, check out that video ahead of time. But anyway, without further ado, here are my thoughts. I love the notion of sharing our mistakes along with what we tried to do in order to fix it. It reminds me of America's Test Kitchen, where you get the chance to see all the things they tried before finally creating their successful recipes. It has me thinking about Genius Hour and student-centered learning. Years ago, my first attempt at Genius Hour, or what I called at the time 20% time, was so awful that I actually didn't attempt it again for months, and I had to change it from calling it 20% time or even Genius Hour to Geek Out Projects. So that became the term we always used, our Geek Out Projects, which were kind of passion projects where students got to choose the topic and they kind of owned the entire process. And again, you can find out more about it by checking out the sketch video that I created. But I didn't want them to associate Genius Hour with that, so I chose a different name. But the thing is, teaching is an iterative process, and over time, things just kind of improve. And so I thought I would share the issues that I ran into and then what I did to fix it. And it got to a point where I think the Genius Hour projects, our Geek Out projects, became some of the best things we did. But again, it didn't start out that way. So issue number one, I didn't provide enough structure. I assumed students would be self-directed and simply get to work on their own passion projects. Instead, well, they kind of treated it like a study hall period where the hardest working students finished homework from other classes while the lowest performing students kind of used it to socialize. In other words, it bombed badly. I assumed that students would know what to do, and that's just not what happened. The classroom became chaotic and noisy, and I ended up nagging students with empty phrases like get to work and come on guys, you don't want to lose this 20% time, do you? And I mean, I became a nag. I became a serious, like, nagging teacher. And instead of being excited about learning, well, students ended up kind of annoyed with me. So here's how I fixed it. I began providing specific structures for Genius Hour. For example, I incorporated design thinking into our first Genius Hour project of each year. And that is a very structured process, although it is incredibly flexible. I provided project planning documents that served as kind of loose templates that they could use in their work. We actually had some mini lessons on different approaches to things like project management or research or pieces like that that they turns out didn't know how to do. And at first I worried that this structure would inhibit the creative process and that students would become kind of risk averse. But that's not what happened. As I pulled students aside for conferences, I noticed that they actually felt more empowered as a result of this structure. It gave them something that they could use and own. Number two, I didn't provide examples. Imagine telling someone about football, but never showing them an example of the game. You stand up and you're like, so there's a center at the line of scrimmage and he snaps the ball to the quarterback who may or may not be in the shotgun formation. If it's a wildcat or a read option offense, there might be a halfback or fullback on either side. But regardless, you want to make sure that your tackles know what they're doing. That would be completely confusing to someone who's never watched the game. never seen an example of football. It just feels distant and abstract. And that's essentially what I did with Genius Hour. I talked about Google and I shared the concept without ever making it visible for them. My students were confused when I assumed they were being lazy and they just weren't getting started. But the truth is, they didn't know what it should look like. So here's how I fixed it. Initially, I overcorrected, and this is my big mistake. I gave them this restrictive formulaic project handout, and I still let them choose the topic, but they didn't get to own the actual process. And later, I began modeling the Genius Hour concept by sharing my own journey. I would tell them what I was working on and what questions were driving my process, and then I would ask them to join in on this metacognition. I would ask them what kinds of resources I might want to consider and what kind of questions I might want to be asking. And then I would show them examples from a broad range of topics and skill levels and remind them that these examples should serve as inspiration rather than expectations. Now, it sounds counterintuitive, but students actually took greater creative risks after seeing these examples. And it taught me that they need to have a visual representation of what they're going to do in order to know what they're actually doing. Number three, I didn't consider alternative grouping. I remember the first time a group of students asked if they could work together, and my response was, I'd really rather you work independently. In the process, I crushed the opportunity to work collaboratively and interdependently, which I think is actually a really valuable part of learning to be independent. I was worried that other students would find it unfair or that individuals would use it as a chance to slack off. But as I watched students creating similar projects, it had me rethinking all of this. It seemed as if they would have been better off while working together. And it was a lesson learned. So here's how I fixed it. It was a simple fix. I told students that they could work with other students. It might mean working permanently in a small group or with a partner, but it might also mean joining other groups and other projects for a brief amount of time and just sharing your opinions and skills and expertise. I was nervous as groups of friends began converging. I figured it was going to get, you know, social and the learning wouldn't happen. But actually, the best projects were the ones where students worked with their closest friends. I think it's because there's power in the trust and vulnerability of friendships. They often work really, really well together. Number four, I didn't set clear behavioral expectations. I remember hearing people talk about the virtues of noisy, messy environments, and I figured that was simply how it had to be. But see, I thrive in spaces that feel safer and even quieter. I don't like chaos. Mental chaos, yes. Chaos of ideas, absolutely. But physical chaos, not so much. I prefer a gentle hum to a loud cacophony. I actually get physically anxious when a class feels out of control. At the same time, I want students to feel the freedom to be themselves and to have the freedom to do things like move around. So here's how I fixed it. I began setting expectations on the procedures. For example, students could move from group to group, but they couldn't run. They could work standing up or sitting down. They could sit with whoever they wanted to. But they would have to sit down and listen when I was talking during direct instruction. Otherwise, it was just too distracting for me. They could talk to other groups, but they couldn't shout across the room. And we put this all on a chart that they could reference at any time. They were welcome to listen to music on their headphones, but they had to take the headphones off when they talked to their peers. Now, the procedures were nuanced, but they were clear. And I think that was important because you sometimes hear people say things like, you know, kids should have the freedom to do whatever they want, or why are we telling them that they have to be doing this and not doing that? But it was important to me that we had a safe environment, and these things allowed for as much freedom as possible. It wasn't always perfect. I had moments when the class would get loud and we would do a 1 minute silent reset. At times when I hushed groups that were simply laughing loudly and genuinely having fun with what they were learning, and I would have to go back and apologize. But overall, it worked. The class felt alive and energetic, but rarely chaotic or noisy. Number five, I didn't allow students to own the academic side of Genius Hour. Initially, I tracked the academic progress. I connected their Genius Hour project to the academic standards that were available. I even wrote out individualized learning targets so that I could show my administrators that I hadn't neglected that side of lesson planning. In the end, I graded their projects on a common rubric with broad topics like creativity and critical thinking. But it was exhausting. It wasn't working to design so many different lesson plans. So here's how I fixed it. I gave students more ownership of the academic elements of Genius Hour. This began with one-on-one student conferences where we would connect specific academic standards to the skills they were learning. For example, students might select certain reading skills or from the ELA standards. They would focus on areas of weakness, moments of self-chosen intervention that they were going to go with. But we also had certain standards that were kind of universal across all projects. For example, there were research and reading and presentation and writing standards from ELA. We had tons of connections to the ISTE standards. You get the idea. And it worked. They began to see the academic side of Genius Hour while still feeling excited about what they were learning. But it went beyond progress monitoring. Students engaged in self-assessment and peer assessment, and sometimes it was a formal structure, but often it was an informal part of the process. They owned this side of the learning. And ultimately, that's what it came down to. Genius Hour only worked when student ownership was really high, but so were things like expectations and structures and systems. It never was perfect. I don't want to ever give the illusion that I have all the answers when it comes to something like Genius Hour. But I think through continuing to refine what I was doing, I was able to figure out what works. And so I thought I would share that journey with you. Hey, thanks for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. If you enjoy this show, would you do me a favor and leave a review or even just choose how many stars you think it deserves in iTunes? That would mean the world to me.